possible later today. We're heading for a high of 83, winds up to 20 miles per hour. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next. Support for the morning show comes from Carthage College, home of the Aspire program, and its multifaceted approach to career preparation. The new program is designed to cultivate leadership and entrepreneurial skills while empowering each Carthage student to shape a custom career development plan from the first days on campus. Learn more about the Aspire program online at carthage.edu/aspire. The Morning Show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. And as always, it's a great pleasure to be welcoming back to the program for his monthly visit to the program, Brian Albrecht, the president of Gateway Technical College. And we have a couple of very special guests who are joining us as well that we'll introduce in just a moment. But first of all, Brian Albrecht, we welcome you back to the morning show. How are you?
I'm doing great, Greg. Thank you. It's always a pleasure to be on the program, and we're getting pretty good at this Zoom technology production, so thanks for your help.
You betcha. So I know one of the first things you want to talk about is what happened on May 19th. Well, I suppose we could talk about what didn't happen on May 19th in terms of previously scheduled plans, but what did happen instead, which turned out to be actually a very meaningful event. Tell our listeners about it.
Absolutely. Well, it didn't take Gateway as long as it's taking the NBA or Major League Baseball to make a decision on how to move forward. So we quickly, after we learned that we weren't going to be able to host a face-to-face commencement ceremony because of the limitation of the COVID-19 impact and the requirements of the CDC, we moved to a virtual format. And on the 19th, we hosted our first ever virtual commencement ceremony for Gateway Technical College, and it was really inspiring. I was really honored to be able to at least find a way to recognize students in that capacity. We had over 1,500 graduates, so it was a lot of people. Would have been a lot of handshaking for me in person, but we had some fantastic speakers, just really remarkable and impressionable stories that they shared with our audience. And Patrick Booth was our commencement speaker, and he was our guest on the radio show last month, and you had asked him if he was ready and prepared for it, and I'll just say that he absolutely was, because he knocked it out of the park, created an inspirational message for our students. And just want to thank the entire team that put the production together, and then congratulate one more time all of our graduates with our diploma and associate degree programs. Now, Greg, I want to just remind our audience that, so that's about half of the students that graduate from Gateway, 1,500. There's another 1,500, over 3,000 students from our communities earn some level of certification from Gateway. So it might be an industry credential, a short-term certificate, maybe a certified nursing assistant certificate. And those are absolutely remarkable. So collectively, probably one of the biggest graduating years we've had in the history of the college in 109 years. To have over 3,000 people earn a credential from Gateway. And last week, we actually had another virtual graduation, which was our GED HSED in adult high school. And wow, was that inspiring. I listened to it again just the other night. Megan Barr, our ambassador for the college, our student ambassador, gave just a powerful, inspirational speech to our students. And just, you know, whether you're working on your high school diploma or whether you're working on an industry credential or working on a college degree, all of those have great meaning and value. And we were so honored to be able to at least share it through a Zoom technology, and hopefully more and more people are getting used to that. And it's been archived on our website, so I know a lot of people are looking at it even after the event. So we're really pleased with that.
Very good. Is the event on May 19th also available on Gateway's website?
It is, yep. Still archived there, and we're going to keep it on there for a while yet. It's still amazing that, you know, people like to go back and reflect and watch it, or maybe there's a family member or friend that had not had a chance to see it, and now graduates can just send the link to their family and friends. That's pretty neat.
Very good. And, of course, one of the things we talked about last time is that unlike an in-person graduation exercise where seating is limited and people who probably very much want to be there can't be there in person, anybody and everybody can actually attend a virtual graduation exercise. It's one silver lining in this situation.
Absolutely. We hope that Doug's watching it on SpaceX up in the space station. We're trying to get it out intergalactic. You're right.
There you go. I know that you are very appreciative of a donation that came from a very good corporate friend to Gateway Technical College, namely SC Johnson. Tell us about that.
Well, I'm always honored and humbled when we receive a call from Fisk Johnson and his team over at SCJ. Jim Ladwick is my direct contact there, and he's responsible for the SC Johnson Fund. And so immediately the response has been amazing that SC Johnson is not only a corporate friend here in our community, but across the globe, over $15 million in contributions across the globe to help fight the coronavirus and help communities establish a more safe and protective environment. And so when we received the call, I was just thrilled to be able to say, yes, we want to help as well. And so between Jim and I, we put a proposal together that Fisk supported wholeheartedly. It was $540,000, so it's a big request to provide short-term training for those individuals that are now maybe dislocated, finding themselves in a tough economic spot as a result of being laid off or having their job eliminated because of the impact of the economy. And so we've already begun to implement training programs in about a dozen different occupational areas to re-engage those individuals into the workforce so that they can continue to sustain their families and build a stronger community around us. So just, I cannot say it enough. Thank you to Fisk Johnson and the entire SC Johnson team for their continued thoughtfulness of our community, and that they have a respect for Gateway to continue to invest in our programs to make sure that we're all collectively working in the same direction to support our community.
Marvelous. I know that our communities have been hit hard by a number of different things, especially in recent days, and I know that you, on behalf of all of Gateway Technical College, have some concerns that the community can come together and move forward.
Absolutely, Greg. You know, so I look at the impact of the coronavirus as a starting point, right? So we started our summer term May 26th. So we have students that are back in class, most of it virtual, but we do have some face-to-face programming as well. And every once in a while, we run into a situation where we have a student that has either had coronavirus or, you know, maybe has symptoms of it. So we're trying to redeploy some health consulting, if you will, with our students, as well as run programs. So I think about what an instructor has to be able to manage today compared to what they had to manage just a few months ago. And it's really amazing that we've been able to make that adjustment. But summer term is off to a good start. We're excited about what we're able to offer in this new hybrid world. You did some fantastic interviews with our faculty, so we have some idea of what it takes to deliver an online program and have some expectation of hands-on and face-to-face. And that enough would have been keeping us busy all through the summer, right? But then most recently with the death of George Floyd and the impact it's had on our community, not only us, but across the nation, and we're seeing it play out, you know, in Kenosha and Racine and other areas. And so Gateway has a responsibility, and I was put a little letter together to our staff and to our students on how much this has impacted me personally, but how much it's going to continue to drive our decision-making going forward and how we can be more inclusive as a community, an educational community, and how we need to really help be a champion for change as it results in racism. And so we have a committee called the Diversity, Equity, Inclusion Committee that has been working on these issues for several years, but it's evident that it's not enough, right? So now all of the technical college presidents, including our university partners and John Swallow and Debbie Ford and I, and trying to help figure out how we can be a catalyst for change and create an environment for a stronger conversation around what these context messages are, right? White privilege and racism and equal opportunity. And so part of it is an educational process, and part of it is making sure that we provide access to educational opportunities like we offer at Gateway to help people get into the workforce and build an economy and have the same equal rights as everyone else. So that's been a big impact. So we've got two really important dynamics going on in our community, and we're really positioning Gateway to be a support system for both. And we want to come out of this a stronger community and a stronger college as a result.
Well said. For those of you just joining us, this is the monthly visit of Brian Albrecht, the president of Gateway Technical College. And as fun as it would be to just spend the hour, the two of us, it's going to be much more interesting than that because we have two very special guests joining us, one directly a part of the Gateway community and the other a very good friend of the Gateway community. Tell our listeners about who's joining us today.
I'll be honored to. Let me start out with my friend Ray Kukari, dean of our manufacturing, engineering, and IT programs. And I'm going to start out by giving him a big shout out for his birthday. Just recently had a birthday, and at Gateway we celebrate at least a week long. Sometimes people celebrate for an entire month. So happy birthday to Ray. Glad to have you on the program. Really appreciate that. Does a tremendous job. And he's been on the program before because he's really an expert in the IT sector. And about a year and a half ago, moved into our manufacturing arena for us as well, and has helped us build out the platform for Industry 4.0, which is the automation and sophistication of sensing technologies. And so we've had Ray talk about those issues before, and as a result of that, he's been involved in a community group that's really helped to develop an inspirational project to engage young people and adults in the idea of innovation and entrepreneurship. So he's paired up today with Jeff Daniel, who is an entrepreneur himself. Some of our listeners may recall it was about four or five months ago, Jeff was on as well, and we were talking about Tech Prize, which was an initiative that we thought we would gather lots of people together on campus this summer, but then coronavirus hit, and now we've got a whole new platform. But it aligns with the idea of digital communications and still entrepreneurship. So we're going to talk about some of those changes and really think differently about how we can continue to inspire everyone in our community around what opportunities this digital world might provide for us.
Very good. So we do indeed welcome to the program entrepreneur Jeff Daniel and Ray Kukari, Dean of Manufacturing Engineering and IT here at Gateway Technical College. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. So Ray Kukari, maybe you can take us back to early to mid-March when life began to change so dramatically for all of us, and particularly for everybody here at Gateway Technical College. How has this transformation over to a virtual world gone for you and your colleagues, and what kind of special responsibilities did you have in sort of overseeing that that transition?
Well, thank you, Greg. This is an exciting opportunity to be on the show, and I want to thank you for that. But I also want to go back to that. The transition, it wasn't as easy as we thought, but we had tools in place. We had just prepared ourselves. Zoom was out in our hands about 2 weeks before this impacted us, and we had training. So we were like a little ahead of the curve, and I don't know how that happened. But it made
good
us
leadership,
prepare.
Ray. That's just plain good leadership. Maybe a little luck in there. There might be a little luck in there too.
But we were well prepared, and you know, my staff and I have been really busy. In fact, we've been busier than we ever have. And you know, I thought we'd get projects done, and we're just now getting a little caught up so that we can get onto our bigger projects. So work has continued as rapidly as it ever has when we were in the office. And I tell you, my faculty are fantastic. They're doing a great job there too.
And Ray, I might just ask you to comment a little bit. So we've had a few students come back to campus. And so what's that like to have students come back? And what are some of the different protocols you've had to put in place in order to make sure the campus is safe?
Yeah, great question, Brian. Well, first of all, we're following the CDC guidelines. And when a student comes to class, actually, we're doing virtual lectures. So we're using Zoom for that type of lecture. And then they're coming on the campus only for the actual labs. And we're using the 6 foot of spacing between each person. We're using face masks. And in some cases, you know, they're using goggles when they're working on dangerous equipment. But it's been very successful. We've had students comment, and they're excited to be there.
You know, I just received a message also from the team over at the Fab Lab, John Zarin and Adam Reed. And I think I mentioned the last time on our program that they were working with 3D printers and producing personal protective equipment like masks and shields and these ear savers for nurses. And the report out this week was they've now produced over 12,000 products and donated them all to local police, fire, and healthcare facilities. So not only is the great education going on, but the continued engagement in our community and production of resources in order to help support all aspects of our community's first responders.
Ray Kakari, how would you rate the understanding and acceptance that you see among both students and faculty in terms of shifting over to this new way of doing things?
Well, I have to tell you, I have probably the greatest faculty on earth. I'm going to tell you that up front. I'm a little biased in that opinion. But they have taken to this like you cannot believe. They've come up with creative ideas to get their lectures across that I never even thought of before. I have a welder that literally has a virtual welder, and he figured out how to integrate that with Zoom. Don't ask me how. And now he's actually showing people how to weld, and then when they get in the classroom, they can go right to it. So great things are happening from our faculty. Great things are happening to students. You know what? A few of the students, the first day in, said, "I'm so happy to be here and get back to work."
Yeah, I think that's a good comment, good reflection, because our students want to be here. They want to go to work, right? So they want those skills. And this idea of the simulation has really been helpful because it does give you an application other than just, you know, watching a PowerPoint or listening to a lecture, although those are really important. So our faculty that are listening, thank you for all of that. But that hands-on is what our students are really, that's why they attend Gateway. So whether you can do it in simulation or face-to-face, either of those help continue to engage students in the process.
So we have entrepreneur Jeff Daniel with us as well. Jeff, it's good to have you back on the program. I think at the time that you were most recently on the program, you had basically just retired in order to really launch some new adventures in the world of entrepreneurship. I suspect that COVID-19 has had more than a little impact on those plans. What has it been like for you professionally in this kind of strange time of COVID-19?
Yeah, thanks, Greg. I appreciate you having me back. You know, I think what I'd say is it's had a huge impact and it's also had no impact. As I think about my historical engagement and such, I was always a big proponent of having people be face-to-face, spending money, finding people around the world to do what we need to do, breaking bread, doing the things you do socially to build teams and that kind of thing. And so that's not available right now. So a lot of the virtual tools that have been available, but perhaps not embraced as effectively or as much as could be, you know, we're just getting after now and just solving those things. I think one of the biggest learnings for me is, you know, we can do most anything through the tools, be it Zoom or Microsoft Teams or, you know, all of the products available. There's a host, right? And we can do so very effectively. But make sure you take the time to stop and take care of the people. So, you know, the culture that we develop as a community in our office environment or our school or environments or whatever those things, you still need to address those things. So just make sure you take the time to still hit the social side of your relationships and things.
Well, that's so important, Jeff. And we think about it, but, you know, the day goes fast. You have a lot of meetings. So we've actually put in place now different points during the day when we allow people to have Zoom meditation or have an exercise class or a social gathering on Zoom. But you're so right. You have to continue to build that relationship, even though it's virtual at this point. I also appreciate your comments that the tools have been there. And so we believe that Gateway will be a stronger institution afterwards because now we know the power of the tools and we can leverage those in a hybrid model so that students can gain access to knowledge at different times in their day, different times in their life, and hopefully improve the learning process in a much shorter time frame.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's incredible how this technology is allowing us to be connected in different ways. And in some ways, it's kind of a shame that the term social distancing keeps being used when really it's physical distancing we need, but we don't need social distancing. We don't need to be socially disconnected at all. And Jeff, to your point, I mean, it's really important in this time when we're physically not together that we underscore all the ways in which we can remain connected and all the ways that really matter.
Absolutely.
The last time that you were here, Jeff Daniel, we were talking about Tech Prize and a number of events that were scheduled to occur this summer in Racine. And needless to say, thanks to the pandemic, some of those plans have had to change. So first of all, for the sake of anybody who did not hear our conversation from a few months back, remind all of us about what this Tech Prize program is and what was planned and now what has been, in a sense, replanned instead.
Yeah, maybe I'll do that in two ways. So first off, the Tech Prize competition was about building a process. And that process wanted to first bring ideas into our community that could be created into businesses and results for our people and our community members, our educational process and such. The second thing it wanted to do is it wanted to find all sorts of fun ways to engage people so that they could learn more about technologies, because these things will be a huge part of our future of our community. We can choose to go down those paths and learn those things and lead in those things, or we can lag in those things and we'll be disappointed because others will be doing that. And then the third thing is implementing the processes to either teach or enhance the way that our communities launch things into business. And so the Tech Prize process is designed to bring ideas. It's got competitions around gaming and coding and this kind of thing. And then business pitch opportunities. If someone has great ideas, how do I make a real business out of that? But also a teaching component that's held in something called Biz Shops for how you run businesses and launch things. And technical shops for understanding things like coding and different things in technology that we would need. So that's what Tech Prize is overall. So now then the second part of that question probably goes to what has changed, right? And so we all debated. We debated whether we should delay it or change it, and we ended up doing both, okay? And so point number one is the full Tech Prize competition will occur in its full aspect at the same time frame next year. So it's going to run from July 29th through August 9th of 2021. Now, with that said, holy cow, there's all sorts of great stuff we can do as a community between now and then, right? So for this year, there's a couple modifications, okay? And so for those that have already presented ideas into the tech-prize.org website, we're going to be going out and looking at those ideas. We're going to assign team members on our team that have experience in doing these things to mentor those individuals to mature those ideas for the competition next year. Or if they're in a place that they can take advantage and do something great, mentor them into the right next step that will take place to actually make it work out. Maybe they need to develop it out. Maybe they need to build a prototype. Maybe they need to build a business case. Maybe they're ready for funding, right? And then we'll take them through whatever step they're in and mature that. So if you're listening and you're one of those people that have those ideas, go ahead and enter that in the idea competition portion of the tech-prize.org website, and we will reach out and work with you on that. The second thing is we want to continue the educational process, okay? And so the Saturdays between later September and mid-April of next year, we will on the Saturdays be having educational opportunities in both the biz shops and the tech shop concepts, okay? And so there'll be an agenda out there on the website, and people can go say, boy, that one's of interest to me. And you can dial into a Zoom type meeting, and there'll be a presenter. There will be an active engagement where people can ask questions and learn about those topics. And we're just wanting that to be the first step forward in using these new technologies to make those things available to our community to progress and such. And then the last thing is going to be we're going to have an app development competition, which Ray is actually leading. So if I could, I'd like to give it to Ray to let him cover that topic.
Sure. Thank you. So the app development project is exciting because it's around smart city initiatives. So there's about 10 of them that we've set up, sample scenarios that are out on the website at tech-prize.org. And you could also make up your own as long as it meets a sustainable type application that would help a smart city.
You know, what I find intriguing about all of this is that, you know, so it's just such a big tidal wave hit our economy and especially small businesses. And so one might say, well, we just need to step back. But what you're suggesting is that this is an opportunity. all kinds of new ideas need to be created and worked on in order to get our economy back into more of a robust state. So while we're at home and we're tinkering in our garages or something, and those ideas we've always wanted to do, this is now the platform to kind of get that out onto the marketplace and to see how we can maybe leap forward as opposed to stepping back, correct? And as you're talking about all of these ideas and creating teams and putting mentors together, I'm intrigued because I think there's a lot of people out there that would have ideas that now they have a little more maybe time in order to work on those.
Yeah, Brian, I'd say two things about that. Number one is our educational leadership in our general community, and I'm talking about RUSD, the private systems, all of our collegiate, your team, Parkside and such. Everybody's leaning into this, trying to think about how can they take advantage of this, incorporate these thought processes and the ideas of competition motivation into our curriculum, right? And so everything from third grade and up, the schools are thinking about how they can get these ideas in the kids' heads, right? And think about how do you problem solve actively? How do you create things that change the future? You know, again, it's that concept is, you know, we can go to school just to learn, we'll call it the basics, but we can also go to school and talk about how we create our future. Be it in a student application or in an adult application, we want to make those opportunities available so those people that have those needs, you know, have a place to go address those needs. And it might be in your curriculum or one of the others.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm thinking about what Ray said earlier about how the instructors have had to make all those adaptations. They are really entrepreneurialing their curriculum, right? They're finding new ways to deliver it, new experiences for students. And so now they have their own personal experience on how do you take the best ideas and actually make them work. So transferring that knowledge into an experience for students at all grade levels potentially could be a little easier because we've lived through it now.
And just, Greg, before we move on, one little point is, and Ray didn't say it, but that app development competition has scholarships tied to the winners of those things. So Brian, Ray, the Gateway community are putting up a number of scholarships to their coding school. And then the Parkside community is actually putting up a first, second, and third place prize as well. That's $1,000 per student for 4 years. $750 for the second and $500 for third. So, I mean, each of our university school systems are stepping forward, trying to actively motivate the way our students think about these things and have the opportunity to participate, compete, and take benefit from it.
Ray Kakari, talk for a moment about this moment of uncertainty in which we kind of all find ourselves, and in particular, the whole realm of education, of course, caught in a situation that is very, very challenging and with a lot of uncertainty in terms of exactly what the near future is going to look like. Where do you see the place of something like Tech Prize in the middle of that? What makes it important and worth the time and energy in this time of uncertainty when, as President Albrecht alluded, you know, some people would be advising to just, you know, pull back, play it safe, take it easy. Obviously, you feel differently when it comes to something like Tech Prize.
I sure do, and thank you, Greg, for that question. You know, when we look at what Tech Prize is going to do on the entrepreneurial side and on the coding side, those are right in my backyard. But when we look overall, we're seeing a rise in the STEM curriculum and the STEAM curriculum as well, because you got to get arts in there. And so we're seeing that. And we want it to continue on, and we need to get young people excited about this. I was just at my neighbor's the other day, socially distancing, talking to their kids about their future. And one of them said, you know, I'm really excited about this. And I said, but you're a junior in high school. You should be taking those classes right now. Let's not wait. Let's get into those classes so you can see if that's really the career choice you want. And he looked at me and said, I can do that? And I said, absolutely. So we're working with his parents to get them to have the knowledge so they can sign them up for those courses through his school. So, I am excited about this because our future is in the young people that are coming up now. And they have to create these new ideas and the new skills have to be there. And there's only one way to do that, and that's to get involved.
Yeah, Ray, you raise a really good point. Sometimes we tend to focus on how it impacts our own lives personally or the the occupational that we are. So, you know, Gateway worries about Gateway, but we had over 8,000 high school students taking Gateway courses before the coronavirus hit. So now, not only does Gateway making a big transition to a digital learning environment, but so are our K-12 partners, and we continue to extend that relationship. So maybe even more students can access through the technologies that your team has developed, and they can create not only great college pathways, but also the entrepreneurship and things like Tech Prize create that catalyst for that conversation. So,
for those of you just joining us, this morning show features Brian Albrecht, the president of Gateway Technical College, in his monthly visit to the program. We're also joined by Ray Kukari, Dean of Manufacturing, Engineering, and IT here at Gateway, and local entrepreneur Jeff Daniel. They were both on the morning show with President Albrecht a few months ago, and we're having something of an update since some of what we talked about has had to change due to the restrictions of COVID-19. Ray Kukari, what would you see on the horizon in terms of new industries and jobs and careers and opportunities, especially in the engineering and IT fields? What are some areas of potential growth that that we should be excited about and that young people in particular should be thinking about?
Well, Craig, you know, the IT side of it's right up my alley. That's where I grew up. But I want to talk about both the engineering, manufacturing, and IT. In IT, the big things right now, the biggest thing in the world, data analytics, AI, we're hearing it in almost every conversation with our local employers. So there's plenty of opportunity at Gateway to take those courses. We have a new program called a Full Stack Developer. And in 15 weeks, you can go from knowing nothing about coding to be a full, an entire programmer at a company locally. And we have local companies that have these jobs in demand. So I'm excited about that. On the manufacturing side, you know, people ask me all the time, what's advanced manufacturing? And I think the misnomer is that's a misnomer because people think, oh, what is that? Well, it's robotics, it's PLCs, it's hydraulics, it's electrical, it's everything that could be in a manufacturing plant from process control through the finished product. And we need people to actually take those courses and become skilled so they can repair robots, they can repair an assembly line. And if one stops, you know, we've heard stories of companies that the production line stops and they lose $1 million a minute. Well, they can't afford that. That's why they need our people to actually learn these skills and be able to apply them.
Ray, you just raised some really great reminders for me to share. Early in the program, I mentioned that SC Johnson made a contribution. Many of the programs you're talking about, the full stack developer, security, cybersecurity programming, manufacturing programs, fall under that funding grant that SC Johnson provided. So right now it's tuition free. So students that are individuals in our community that are interested in taking those programs, there's no cost. And it's an exciting time to think about those new careers, but also to have the opportunity, the financial support in order to be able to complete, because I know you know this, but maybe you could share. So what are the expected outcomes that when your student completes, how much are they going to make? What kind of jobs are there?
Wow. So advanced manufacturing locally start off between $40,000 and $50,000 a year and move up rapidly. Full stack developer, somewhere between $50,000 and $60,000. And again, move up rapidly after a few years of experience. So the jobs are there, the money's there. And, you know, we always encourage them to come back and get that leadership or that entrepreneurship skill to really enhance how they're going to perform at work. So, yeah, those are all there and the money's there.
That's a couple of the magic words that young people like to hear when they're thinking about what possibilities to explore. Jeff Daniel, let's circle back to Tech Prize for a moment. You were telling us about some of the ways in which the timeline has been reworked and so on, but some really exciting possibilities are still in place. What would you say has been the interest level in Tech Prize? Has it taken a hit because of the reality of COVID-19 and social distancing and so on, or are people still finding ways to engage with this exciting opportunity?
Yeah, I think I'll answer that in two ways. First off would be with our educational leadership, like the RUSD, the privates, our collegiate leadership, you know, they're really excited to make this happen. We really debated whether we would go forward and do the full thing in a virtual fashion. And we just decided it was better to go forward and address the constructive things we could do really well with the preparation we have available, and then go for the full thing next year. So gain all the benefit we can right now, but then, you know, go for the full program next year and that kind of thing. When I think about the business climates and such like that, you know, if you think about one of our big goals was to bring patronage to the downtown community and bring our community together around ideas and launching things in our community and that kind of thing. So we're trying to say, how can we still engage our downtown participants in our virtual processes that will take place, and maybe have sponsors and they can have things in their stores that people can come see between now and next year. So at the same time, you know, it's great, but it's also got our challenges. So if we can find ways to support our local businesses, they would all appreciate that. And they're putting their foot forward to try to do the right things on that front as well.
I know that you have some resources you have put in place to help people with some of these matters of design modification and problem solving and so on. Why don't you tell our listeners about some of the ways in which some of these resources are being shared with people?
Yeah, there's going to be, it's primarily, we'll call it two different paths. One is each of the school systems is designing things into their own curriculum to be able to talk about these aspects, problem solving and such within the curriculums they have. The second thing is if you go to the tech-prize.org website, you will see the build out of the biz shops and the tech shops that will formally instruct to those things between kind of the September timeframe and the April timeframe. So we'll be loading those at the end of this coming week. We're actually having a meeting tonight to agree on the dates and who will be speaking the topics and those kind of things. But think about like a 1 hour kind of, you know, take some time on a Saturday morning and, you know, dial in and learn something great in you know, invite people that you know that will benefit from those things, that kind of idea.
Yeah, Jeff, it sounds like a sort of a win-win all the way around, because people individually can just learn about some of these new ideas. They can participate on a team. If they have their own idea, they can champion that idea. It's a way to bring people together, even though we're still social distancing. And potentially, as we move forward and get a little bit better at, you know, kind of opening up business downtown, it'll bring more people downtown. So there is a way to create a win out of all of this. And I'm really appreciative of your entire committee for not just giving up on the idea, but finding different solutions in order to keep that mission true.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ray Kakari, what kind of response have you seen from employers in the area and maybe other community groups to this whole notion of Tech Prize? What has been the interest level, and how much educating have you had to do to make sure people even understand what this is all about and what its full potential is?
Well, that's a great question, Greg. The employers, we had an open house when we kicked this off about 6 months ago, and we had a packed facility of employers wanting to know how they can become engaged. And I don't think that's gone down at all. In fact, I know from this, you know, the situation we're in, they can't wait to get back to normality or some level of that. And the community groups have all been excited. We've had community groups come forward and say, you know, we're going to help you plan the biz shops. We're going to help you with the resources. Jeff and I have been really pleased with that direction of the community involvement. And we hope that continues, because they're the ones that are going to benefit.
Absolutely. So in some ways, Jeff Daniel, this Tech Prize feels like it's absolutely ideal for this moment in which the world is confronting some really enormous challenges and issues, and we need some new ideas and particularly some technological breakthroughs to really enact some significant changes and come up with some significant solutions. In what ways do you see Tech Prize and the concept of Tech Prize folding into this moment in our history?
You know, there's 100 ways we can talk about that one. It'll take a lot more time than we have available. But the way I just kind of think that in the most concise fashion is, The process is about designing the way our community distinguishes itself from others so that we can recruit those that have the needs to launch things to a place that has a system that's built, oiled, and ready to run to do that. So I'm not quite ready to announce it today, but because of this process, we're in communities of folks throughout the nation and the world that have needs for this kind of work to be done. There will be a major corporation announcing that they're going to launch jobs in this community that we're working with the state to go through motivations that are going to provide the exact kind of jobs that Ray and Brian are speaking of here. And so we can use these technologies and these methods of communication to reach into those communities, let them know that we have that system built and we're open for business. And then through doing that, I think, we're starting to demonstrate that those results will just come and repeat themselves.
You know what, I think it's so inspiring about this too. Sometimes you need something unique to happen to have sort of a breakaway moment, right? Prior to coronavirus, everybody was fully engaged in all kinds of different activities. Coronavirus caused us all to slow down in life a little bit. And so now this is a chance to break through. And so the Tech Prize concept and idea, the collaboration that it requires, not only locally, but as you're mentioning, across the globe, can happen virtually. We're more comfortable with those tools now, as you mentioned earlier. So that breakthrough moment becomes a point in time where, hey, we can do this. I can solicit support from a company in California, or I can rely on an engineer from Tokyo to help us design and create the idea. So I think you're absolutely right that there are these moments where all of a sudden things start to align in a certain direction, and entrepreneurship is one of them, especially at this time.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing you would add to that, Brian, if I could, Greg, real quick, yeah, is just it's starting to really, you know, we might have started this in Racine, right? And the smart city initiatives are heavily tied into everything we're doing and such. But then, you know, it's now expanding down into Kenosha. The RAUSD previous leadership, that gentleman took a role in Oak Creek. He's expanding those thought processes up there. We're tied into the Madison and the Milwaukee communities. I truly believe this concept is going to help us mold what's going to take place in, we'll call it the whole Southeast Wisconsin, or maybe broader. So.
Very good. Ray Kakari, what do you think are some of the most exciting ways in which we could see change in our local communities as a result of what's going on with Tech Prize?
Well, Tech Prize's goal all the time was to bring the best and the brightest entrepreneurs, engineers, IT people here to the Racine community. And what we want them to do is not only come here to compete, we want them to come here to live, work, and play. And that's really what we're trying to do. And that's what I'm hoping to see, that we're going to double in size as a city and county. And we're going to create so many new jobs because of all these entrepreneurs actually launching their businesses here. And when you think about, the last 100 years, we were the entrepreneurial capital of the world. And we want to see that come back.
Hmm.
Yeah, I would only add one thing, Ray. So I love the idea of live, work, and play. I'd add educate in there as well. So we want people to use the resources that you're all developing, you, Jeff, and the entire team. All those tools become a part of an educational process that we use now in society, not just schools. It can't just be educating in schools. It's got to be educating outside and in community-based organizations and in industry as well. And we used to think that research and development only happened in industry, right? And there's a separate team in industry. Not everyone gets to play in that pool. But now we want to say that research and development, R&D, entrepreneurship, experimentation, the fixers and makers, right? That's the kind of spirit we want to create. And that's what you're talking about, what Racine was grounded upon. That's why we have so many outstanding family-based companies in our community, because that's that level of spirit, that entrepreneurial spirit. So just a great credit to all of you. And I continue to advocate to make sure that Gateway is a strong player in that space.
Hmm. So as we near the end here, Jeff Daniel, I want to give you the opportunity to tell our listeners the three most important things you want them to take away from this conversation about Tech Prize.
I think I'd address that. Yeah, I'll just do it just as you said, those three things. So idea number one is it's about the process. We want to take ideas. We want to create motivations to enhance our skills. We want to provide a process to launch these things in our businesses. Inside of that statement, our team meets every other Monday, either at the uncorked location that Toto Begonia owns here in Racine, or we meet virtually right now in the Zoom session. So if somebody wants to get involved, you have a passion for these things, hit us on the website, tech-prize.org, find us, we'll reach out to you, we'll get you involved in that kind of thing. The second thing is then that, you know, we're going to use the time between now and next year to do the best we possibly can for the community, right? So if you have those ideas, put them in the website. We'd love to engage with you. If you'd like to go through those learning processes, that curriculum will be out there for the Saturdays. Take a little time.
And for some reason, the very end of our file seems to be gone. But my thanks to Brian Albrecht, Ray Kukari, and Jeff Daniel for being part of today's morning show here on WGTD. To finish out today's morning show, we're going to be spending a couple of more minutes with yesterday's morning show guest, Brian Dumain, the author of a fascinating book about Amazon called Bezonomics. After our interview, I told Brian Dumain about a recent incident during the COVID-19 crisis in which Kenosha County Health Department officials sought access to Amazon's fulfillment center near I-94. That access was denied them, at least for a time. I asked Brian Dumain if this sounds like a commonplace occurrence with Amazon and its facilities.
I think it is, Greg. I mean, I don't know the details of that particular situation, but what happens in the fulfillment centers at Amazon is that the managers who run it, and they run it fairly independently, are under tremendous pressure to make goals. And I think sometimes they get blinded by that. I mean, there's such customer obsession in the Amazon culture that the managers are terrified to miss their goals. Now, if, you know, shutting down the warehouse for county inspectors to come in, which I think would have been the right thing to do, would slow down the warehouse business, I can imagine an Amazon warehouse manager saying, like, I can't afford to do that. We've got to get these packages out. I mean, they're in a tough situation, in a sense. They have to keep operating during the pandemic. They're trying to instill safety practices, but I imagine they seem a little late on that. But again, you know, they're 800,000 employees, and it's a huge vehicle to turn around in a moment's notice. That doesn't excuse safety lapses at all, but, you know, it sort of helps one understand why they were slow to let the county health inspectors in. I think they're going to get better at it. And interestingly, I think that Amazon's going to create some new businesses out of this. I mean, they're putting in a very comprehensive COVID-19 testing system for their own employees. And I can imagine Amazon turning that into a business, either if we, God forbid, have another flare up in the virus, or for the next pandemic, where they offer testing services to other corporations or local governments, or maybe even the federal government. You know, sort of like, who would I rather have running my national testing system? You know, Jeff Bezos or Donald Trump? So, you know, it's complicated. I think I see why Amazon was slow to let those inspectors in. I don't think it was the right decision, but they did correct it, and they're pretty good at correcting things once they see the problem and recognize that it's a problem.
I also asked Brian Dumain how Amazon has been doing during the COVID-19 crisis.
Well, first of all, they've handled a huge surge in demand. I mean, overall, in the first quarter alone, their sales are up 26%, and for a $280 billion corporation, that's a huge bump up. They had to hire 175,000 employees to meet that demand. Yeah, the problem is that, you know, everybody wants to keep the workers safe, but part of keeping them safe is to slow down the delivery process. you know, you need more social distancing in the warehouse. You have to clean it more often. You have to slow down the workflow to give people tests, to hand out masks, and all of this. So, I mean, Amazon has been, you know, criticized in the New York Times, for example, for not keeping their employees safe enough. And then they're also criticized because their deliveries are slowing down. They're not doing 1 or 2 day deliveries. So which is it, right? Do you want your employees to be safe, or do you want your